Doug Flutie is down to his last at bat.
Without the Hail Mary pass, I think I could have been very easily forgotten. We would have gone to the same bowl game. The Heisman voting was already in. And the direction, everything would have been the same, except that pass put this label on me as it's never over till it's over guy.
Flutie flushed, throws it down.
You're going to be a football player, really good.
Today is the best day of your life. Believe it.
He might be the finest quarterback produced in the last 10 years.
He needs to be like that. That's all I need.
Fortunately for me, I didn't lose my life. I didn't lose my job.
Football convinced him that life is a team game.
Rest of your life. Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it.
What are you most proud of?
What am I most proud of? I think it's the longevity, the being able to be an athletic quarterback and play this game for 21 years.
Number 89, you're in the big leagues. You just caught your first career touchdown pass from a legend, Doug Flutie.
Every time I stepped on the field, I gave it everything I had. Felt like the critics were out there, and they were in big numbers.
I thought it was a circus sideshow, bringing in this little Heisman Trophy winner, and through the preseason.
I really didn't care what they thought.
Run, but get caught.
And I said to this day, I'm going to announce my retirement, and they'll say, see, I told you, you couldn't do it.
It's difficult to forget 21 years of doubt. To forgive those who judged you by size instead of skill. 5 foot, 9 3/4 inches. A typical height for an average man. A tiny stature for an NFL quarterback. This one trait would overshadow Doug Flutie for his entire football life.
You know, I got to high school. Day one, I practiced with all the sophomores on the sophomore team. Even then, I was the undersized kid. I mean, I was small, and I just went out and made plays without getting hit.
There's this little guy over there going sideline to sideline, knocking plays down, and I'm hollering, who is that kid over there? He said, that's the young Flutie kid. Right from the first time we had him on our practice field, he was special.
I was on the field playing with my brother, Bill. Of course, he was the starting quarterback. But when the offense started struggling, they needed to get both of us involved.
I could throw it pretty well, but Doug was throwing 70, 75 yards downfield. So Coach Lamb said, Bill, you go to wide receiver, we'll put Doug at quarterback. And I was like, yeah, sure, all right.
I threw 3 interceptions in the first half. I think I had a fumble. And the coaches were kind of scratching their head, thinking, you know, what are we doing here? Second half, Bill had 4 touchdown catches. I just went to him. Down the field we went. But I did not have a prolific high school career at all. I mean, there were no records being set. There were no 300-yard games. There was none of that. I'd have a nice play or two.
Oh, he was awesome. He was awesome. And, of course, in 11th grade, I tried out for cheerleading, so I got to go to every game, and I watched him play. I loved the cheerleading, and I enjoyed doing that, but I spent a lot of the time watching him play because he was amazing.
I was very close to playing at an Ivy League school. The Division I schools, when a coach would come visit, all he would talk about was my size.
Tom Lamb was really the one that put me on him, because I was recruiting Massachusetts at the time, and Tom was somebody that I really respected. And I remember during the recruiting process, we were in his living room, and his dad said to me, I don't think you know what you're getting. I always remember that line, how true he was.
1, 2, 3. Flutie accepted his only Division I scholarship offer and attended Boston College in the fall of 1981.
I get to BC, and there are 9 quarterbacks on the depth chart. I'm number 9. you know, thought I was way in over my head, that I'd never see the field.
Doug was an afterthought to the offense. And I have no doubt that he had a chip on his shoulder because a lot of people didn't believe in him.
As the season progressed, Doug would move from the seventh quarterback to the fifth quarterback to the third quarterback. And then finally, we were over in Penn State.
So Penn State's offensive weapons are seemingly endless, and it is 38-0.
Fourth quarter comes around, they're like, warm up. I'm like, oh my God, seriously, I'm gonna get in the game.
Now it will be Doug Flutie at quarterback.
I expected him to get hammered, to get beat up, spit out, and thrown back onto the sidelines.
They call a play, I roll out left, guy's open, I throw it to him.
Fine pass by Flutie.
I roll out right, guy's open, I throw it to him.
This is the deepest penetration for Boston College.
The game was the same that it's always been. It's like you take your read, you throw the ball to the open guy.
When he came in with that much confidence for a freshman, I remember distinctly thinking, who the hell does he think he is? And then he goes and starts doing the things he did. I'm like, oh, that's who.
This is Flutie. Touchdown, Boston College.
That's not supposed to happen. The guy's not even supposed to be at Penn State. Here he is in front of 85,000 people. He's winking over at the coach, saying it's all going to be okay. I got this.
All these guys that were telling me I was too short and how complicated the game is and all, it's not that complicated. It was the same game I'd always played.
After his performance against Penn State, Flutie became the starter. Doug's sophomore year began with an upset of powerhouse Texas A&M, followed by a tie with defending national champion Clemson.
I think a big part of our success, especially early on, was we didn't know any better. We were just having fun. And that was the mentality. We weren't intimidated because we were just taking it all in and enjoying it. We were selling out home games. A lot of attention locally. And I thought it was just regional. But when I finished third in the Heisman my junior year, that was kind of the wake-up call of how much attention we were really getting.
Up in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts, there's a growing pride for what many folks up there claim is the best team in the East and the best quarterback in the land.
The media angle for the Doug Flutie phenomenon was all too easy.
If little Doug Flutie can make it in that world with
his... One Chicago sports writer dismissed Flutie as a dwarf player from a dwarf college.
As you play, are you terribly conscious of your lack of size?
Not when I'm on the field. When you're off the
when
field,
I first got started, I used to like people writing a story about the small quarterback making it. And now it's come to the point where I'm a short quarterback in my own little category. And that bothers me a little bit.
Have you already reconciled, although you're just a junior, have you already reconciled yourself to the probability that the pros will probably pass you by?
I'd love to take an opportunity to try in pro football, but from what I've heard and people have told me, I really don't think it's going to be in the future for me.
Sports Illustrated calls him Magic Flutie. He is Doug Flutie, the tiny quarterback at Boston College, the most exciting college football player since O.J. Simpson.
Flutie pulls off most incredible plays in every game that we've seen him play.
There's not a lot of people out there that could tell you all of Doug's numbers, but they can certainly tell you about his big plays. They can certainly tell you about some of the miraculous things he pulled off.
And Flutie has some excellent maneuverability.
A guy that just found ways to make things happen in any number of different ways.
The flair for dramatics that he has, he's almost unbelievable.
Doug Flutie would leave college as the nation's all-time leader in passing yardage and total offense.
It was absolute must-watch football. You didn't want to miss it. You never knew when that crazy play was going to happen.
The play was 55 flood tip.
My whole thinking on that play is I roll out by as much time as possible, lay it up in the air, and see what happens.
They never ran the play right. It's supposed to be tipped to somebody, but he always just threw it to the guy instead of having the tip.
At the end of the first half of a 1984 game with Temple, Flutie introduced the football world to 55 Flood Tip.
Right in the middle, a bunch of guys, it comes down around the goal line. Sure enough, Gerard got under it, caught it right on the goal line for a touchdown.
I remember talking to Doug about that play afterwards, and he said, look, it's a 50-50 chance your guy's going to catch it. I'm thinking, it's not 50-50, it's 1-in-50.
November 23rd, 1984, obviously the moment I'll always be remembered for.
It was the day after Thanksgiving. Windswept rain kept many away from the Orange Bowl. But the matchup couldn't have been more compelling for fans in their living rooms.
They were the team that everyone loved to hate with all the NFL prospects. We were the Cinderella story, the little kid at quarterback, the small school from the north, all that stuff.
You're going to see one of the most exciting players ever in college football. That is 5'9" Doug Flutie. What can we expect?
But don't forget the three quarters.
Here you have sort of the classic matchup between, you know, the academic Catholic school from the north to the football factory in the south. In our locker room, it wasn't that story at all. In our locker room, it was, yeah, they're good and they're fast and they're big, but we got Doug.
Doug Flutie completed his first 11 passes and led Boston College to touchdowns on three of its first four possessions.
The end zone, it's complete for the touchdown. He hits Phelan.
The teams combined for over 1,100 yards of offense.
Cuts back inside the 30. What a touchdown run!
In the waning moments of the fourth quarter, BC led 41 to 38. Miami took possession deep in its own territory.
I'm standing next to Jack McNeil. With 2 minutes to go in the game, Miami's got the ball, and we're leading 41-38. Doug comes up and says, Coach, let him score. I said, what do you mean, let them score?
It's like, oh, for crying out loud, they're going to score. Let them score. Give us some time so we can go down and do it back to them.
Bratton to the end zone.
Finally, they stick it in the end zone with 28 seconds left. It's like, we couldn't have gotten it back with a minute to go.
And there's nothing but heartbreak for the Eagles.
The game itself would have been amazing on its own, but then it turned into something entirely different.
The hope now is let's get the ball across midfield. We can get it across midfield. We've got a shot at the end zone. We'll put one up and see what happens.
And now Doug Flutie is down to his last at bat.
We're out at the 48, and it's like, okay, fine. It's time for a Hail Mary. Let's throw this thing up. Got in the huddle and called the play. 55 Flood Tip. Probably a half second delay, and boom, I see an official's arms go up in the air. I just start laughing my ass off. I couldn't believe it.
It represented that he was capable of what we would call magic, and it was hard evidence of it. It was as if, to borrow a burden of proof from the Catholic Church, evidence of a miracle. And that, for him, was evidence of a football miracle.
About a 50-50 chance. You got a couple guys down there, they got a couple guys down there, you throw it and let everybody go for it.
There was a line that connected who he was to what he would become. And there was the line drawn by that football up in the air, spiraling down to his best friend on the team, Gerard Phelan. It changed everything for him. And he had no idea. He had no idea how it changed him, how it was going to change him, or how things were going to change around him.
Thank you so much.
You're super cool.
You are super cool.
We run past you every day.
Good to see you. Thank you.
You're
very welcome.
The Heisman Trophy winner from Boston College, Doug.
Coming up, Doug Flutie tries to rise above his NFL doubters.
Flutie, bring those left side.
Can a guy who's 5'9", 175 pounds, make it in the pros?
Yes, he can. But it's a matter of ability and not size. I feel I can play, I don't know for sure, and those questions will be answered in the future.
The NFL was so scared of me. They didn't know what to think of me. Okay, here you won the Heisman, you've put up all these numbers, you beat big-time teams. You're too small to play. So publicly, when they get asked a question, oh, he's great, he's a phenomenal talent, he's this, he's that, he blah, 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 and they try to say all these positive things, and in the back of their mind, they're like, somebody else draft him.
Months before the NFL draft, somebody else did. The USFL's New Jersey Generals, owned by Donald Trump.
I'm not that tall.
Trump signed the quarterback he coveted to a 5-year, $7 million contract, making Doug Flutie the highest paid player in football history.
I didn't want to take the risk of passing up on that kind of money to be a late-round draft choice in the NFL. The pressure came when I realized how much more than the other guys on the team I was making.
Flutie made quite a first impression on professional football.
I went 3 quarters without completing a pass.
Flutie's pass, intercepted. That's his first complete pass of the day.
Eventually, some of that Flutie magic surfaced, and he helped the Generals to a playoff spot in the final season of the ill-fated USFL.
Flutie rolling left, shoots it in the end zone, touchdown!
I loved it. I loved the USFL.
As the league neared its demise in 1986, Flutie was traded by the Los Angeles Rams, who owned his NFL rights, to the Chicago Bears.
When I went to Chicago, Jim McMahon was really banged up. Tom Zach and Steve Fuller were there, and Jim felt that those other guys deserved the opportunity first, not an outsider, and that created friction.
A lot of guys got aggravated with me when I brought Doug to Chicago. I brought him here because he gave us a better chance to win.
Flutie made his first start in the Bears' season-ending victory in Dallas.
Rainbow and right side.
2 weeks later, he started again as the 14-2 defending Super Bowl champions hosted Washington.
Go G! Get that little pump!
Flutie threw 2 interceptions and completed only 11 of 31 passes.
I have no regrets about it. If that was switched over today, I would bring him again today.
It was very disappointing because I think that was my best opportunity in my career. That was my best opportunity to get to a Super Bowl.
The following October, the Bears traded Flutie to New England.
We kind of questioned what he could do, if he really could play in the NFL, because that was always the cloud over his head. Was he too short?
In his first relief appearance, the local hero stood tall.
Flutie to pass again. Let's it go long. Morgan open. Touchdown!
anything I did through those years was just magnified. If it was something negative, it was magnified because I was too short to play. See, I told you so, blah, blah, blah. If it was something good, he's amazing, it's Flutie magic. Yeah, you know, I ran a naked bootleg, had a shot at the corner, and ran it in. What was magic about that?
I'm not down playing it at all if it's coming across that way. Maybe because I'm just still stunned. You witnessed a very incredible performance. That's what happened.
It almost felt, from my perspective, like, oh, shoot, Doug did good, we won. We've got to play him.
In 1988, Flutie won 6 of his 9 starts, but never won over his head coach.
Raymond Barry tells me he had a vision. We need to be more explosive going into the playoffs. Well, in order to get to the playoffs, we got to win next week.
With Flutie benched, the Patriots' offense produced only 10 points. Trailing by 2 scores in the game's final seconds, Raymond Barry turned to Flutie, hoping for magic.
I got a phone call during that offseason. We had a mini camp coming up next week. You're not invited.
Coming up.
Well, we've seen Flutie jump up and down a number of times. I'm now convinced it's not because he's excited. He just can't see what's going on downfield after he throws it and wants to see what happens.
In 1990, the NFL kind of labeled me as a backup quarterback. I went to the CFL, and it really gave me an opportunity to just wheel and deal and regain my confidence.
Deep for Alexander, 2 receivers are there, caught!
My first game in Canada, I'm throwing a darn Hail Mary to tie the game and send it to overtime.
The Canadian Football League and Doug were a match that was made in heaven. It's a bigger field. You only have 3 downs to get a first down, so you're throwing almost every play. And if you're not throwing, the quarterback's probably scrambling and running with the ball. It really was meant for Doug.
It allows for a more athletic, agile player to be successful. And generally, the players are a little smaller than in the NFL.
The mobility was looked on as a positive. The width of the field gave me a little more space to make people miss. When I decided to take off and scramble, it felt like cheating. It became a game I got very comfortable with in a hurry.
Touchdown!
I really wanted to stay in British Columbia, but they wouldn't budge on their offer, so I signed with Calgary for much more money.
Today, the Calgary Stampeders have signed a 4-year, multi-million dollar agreement with Mr. Doug Flutie.
I really saw him as a marquee player. I saw him as a superstar. What Doug did in these games is probably the best football that's ever been played. And I know that's a really bold thing to say, but Doug would do things that you just don't see anymore.
Flutie trying to sprint outside, gets away from one man. Look at those moves. How about Doug Flutie?
And so I truly believe that he's the Wayne Gretzky of football.
First CFL championship game, the Grey Cup, was a coronation.
Flutie for Pitts, touchdown!
Flutie was named Grey Cup Most Valuable Player and won his first professional football title.
Doug was more than just that player wearing number 20 with the Stampeders. He was the identity of the CFL. And for him to win his first championship with Calgary really established his presence as one of the great athletes to ever play the game.
Well, they had everything going
for them. Flutie and Calgary owner Larry Rickman never celebrated a Grey Cup title together again. Their business relationship deteriorated as well.
I was getting paid like a year late all the time. We had to wait till the season ticket money would come in for the following season, and then he'd start paying me. But I got my money, you know, the first couple of years.
Ron certainly did his job. Rickman had crafted a multifaceted contract for the league's highest paid player. But by 1995, various financial interests in the CFL and elsewhere would leave him unable to make good on it.
As part of the deal, he owned 10% of the Stampeders. The Stampeders had cost me $15 million by that time. At the time, the clubs just didn't have real value to them. And when I say real value, I'm talking about the kind of value that they have now. But at that time, it was a down cycle.
It's a good explanation.
Doug said the personal services portion, which was roughly $700,000, was completely unpaid. Is that your recollection of it?
Yes.
Tells you the type of teammate Doug Flutie was. I mean, here he played his butt off for the whole regular season without getting a cent.
Do you ever intend to pay him back? I mean, is that possible?
No, gosh, no. No, never. I don't think that I owe Doug Flutie anything.
Doug Flutie left Calgary after four seasons. In that span, he led the Stampeders to four Western Division finals, two Grey Cup appearances, and was named the CFL's most outstanding player three times.
Doug Flutie!
Flutie arrived in the CFL's biggest market, Toronto, in 1996, a year after the Argonauts won only four of 18 games.
It was quickly highlighted what an amazing player he was when he went over to Toronto, because he turned that franchise around.
Go ahead and switch off 11 when you're out.
We won 11 more games. If we had to say how many games were attributed to Doug Flutie, he's not perfect. So 10 of the 11.
Second and goal.
The Toronto turnaround culminated with Doug Flutie's second Grey Cup title.
He had won it once before, but he had been the MVP four times. So this game was a statement of he was not just the best player, but he was the best team player in the league.
A year later, Flutie led the Argonauts to a repeat title.
Doug Flutie scores! We are seeing the greatest player in CFL history at his best.
I just had never been one that really allowed myself to enjoy that moment as much as I probably should have.
Congratulations to Doug Flutie and the Toronto Argonauts.
And I finally learned how to enjoy the win. And it was a fun moment.
To have six MVPs and then to add three Grey Cups, he made his mark up here, which will never diminish. And to me, he's easily the best CFL player that's ever played.
Ladies and gentlemen, as voted on by our independent panel from coast to coast, I am honored to introduce the greatest player in the history of the Canadian Football League. Please welcome Doug Flutie.
Thank you.
Coming up.
I was 35 years old. And I felt like the only place to go from here is down if I stay in the CFL. Maybe I should retire. In 1998, I was ready to retire, and Buffalo came knocking. And I thought, what the heck, let's do this. I'll play 2 years, call it quits, and let's get the heck out.
Doug, a lot of people say that you're just too short to play in the NFL. How do you address that issue that comes up again and again?
All I know is I've played the game at my height all my life. All right? I know no different. And
he fed off of people thinking he was too small. He was a great college player to watch, and I loved the Hail Flutie play as much as anybody else. But I just didn't see it for him in the NFL.
I signed in Buffalo, minimal contract. and was told I'd have an opportunity to compete for the starting job.
First chance they had to get somebody bigger, somebody more traditional looking as a pocket quarterback, they got him, Rob Johnson. They got him from Jacksonville.
So here's Rob Johnson, our new quarterback.
He was touted like they were finding gold. All of a sudden, Flutie kind of became an afterthought.
I think going in right now, Rob's our number one quarterback. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We haven't given up on anybody else, certainly, but we feel like he's going to step out and be our number one quarterback right now.
Coach Phillips stated that Rob was going to be the starter. Doug wasn't happy hearing the announcement that it was declared so definitively. But Doug would just have a little smile on his face like, it is what it is, and we'll see where we go. And it got exciting.
What an interesting turn of events here in San Diego. Rob Johnson in his first start going down.
And that means Doug Flutie, even though he's 4'7", is going to get a helmet right now.
Here's Flutie, backpedals in the pocket. He lets it go long, and it is caught for the touchdown. How do you like that?
How about this? Doug Flutie said he was too small to play in the NFL.
After an absence of nearly a decade, Doug Flutie's second act in the NFL was underway. Flutie's play in the season opener created a buzz in Buffalo that kept building.
He started out scrambling with the ball like he normally did, and all of a sudden he turns and just throws the ball.
Now he throws, touchdown! A nice play by Doug Flutie.
Let's go!
Wow! He just did so many things that were unexpected, that were special. His game really did work. He was making it happen in an NFL game. Guys like me, who thought we were so smart, saying this will never work, he went out there and proved it. And I was more than happy to write that I was wrong. And I'll eat my bowl of Flutie Flakes to say that I was wrong.
By the middle of the 1998 season, Flutie Mania was at full pitch. In week 7, the underdog Bills and their undersized quarterback faced the undefeated Jacksonville Jaguars.
Flutie, back to pass, throws it, it's caught, touchdown, Eric Moe, in for the score! The man without his own country for 8 years has come south of the border and electrified this crowd. Does Flutie have a pro miracle to go along with a BC miracle?
Miracle man, I believe.
I threw the ball without looking.
Buffalo's coaches became believers as well. In November, they named Flutie their full-time starter. After leading the Bills to 9 wins and a playoff appearance, Flutie collected Pro Bowl and Comeback Player of the Year honors, along with a new contract.
That was the best ball Doug Flutie has thrown this season. A perfect strike, right on the money. The right read to see Eric Moulds deep down the middle, and he got the ball to him in stride.
With 10 victories and another playoff berth in 1999, Buffalo's financial commitment to Flutie proved wise. But the team could not overlook its other multi-million dollar investment.
In a meaningless game against Indianapolis at the end of the year, because we had our playoff spot locked up, they came to me and said, we're going to let Rob play. You rest up, get ready for playoffs.
Doug was held out. Rob Johnson played in the game. Decisive victory by us.
And Rob Johnson is the man of the moment. He is the man of the hour. Fire.
And then conversation took place between Wade Phillips and Mr. Ralph Wilson. And out of that conversation, the head coach walked out, said we're making a change.
This week, as far as quarterback's concerned, I'm starting Rob Johnson, with Doug being the second quarterback.
I love Wade Phillips. Wade was one of the
most enjoyable head coaches I've ever played for. It wasn't Wade's decision. Management made a decision that they were spending this money on Rob and hadn't had any returns out of it yet, wanted to see what he could do, so they started him in the playoff game.
Johnson looks to throw a screen, he's sacked! Sacked!
Johnson was sacked six times and completed only 10 passes, none for touchdowns. But following a late fourth quarter field goal, Buffalo held a one-point lead with 16 seconds left to play.
Do the Titans have a miracle left in them? If they do, they need it now. Christie kicks it high and short. Going to be fielded by Lorenzo Neal at the 25. Yeah, pitches it back to Wycheck. He throws it across the field to Dyson.
He's got something. He's got something. He's got it. He's got it.
On the sidelines, the player who manufactured miracles on football fields all his life, helplessly fell prey to one.
You know, in hindsight, you know, Doug probably would have won the game. So, you know, that's kind of the way we look at it.
I think when he was asked to go to San Diego, it really gave him a sense of pride because he felt that a team actually really wanted him to be at the controls and to be the guy for their team.
Shotgun Flutie. There's the snap. Here he is looking. Hit from behind. Got away. He's on the run now. 15-10. Flutie's gone. Touchdown, Chargers.
Doug Flutie joined the San Diego Chargers in 2001. The 39-year-old was the undisputed starter for the first time in his career. Flutie guided San Diego's offense for an entire season, while also mentoring his rookie backup.
The first time I ever met Doug Flutie, basically sitting down next to him in the team meeting and saying, you know, I've been a big fan of yours for a long time. I was 5 years old when you threw that Hail Mary pass. That was the first thing I ever said to him. He's like, oh, great. Thanks for making me feel old.
And Doug Flutie looks like he's a 22-year-old rookie.
There's times where, man, things break down and you just got to go play ball.
What a play, what a pass by Doug Flutie.
And there was not a better guy to learn from when you talk about just going to play ball than Doug Flutie.
Just the way you draw it up. Doug, I want you to take the snap, bubble it, then pick it up, and then walk into the end zone.
Whatever his age, wherever he played, amazing always followed.
Doug Flutie way about 15 yards off the line of scrimmage and going to kick it. And he drop kicks it up and throws. How about that? And what might be Doug Flutie's last professional football game?
Look at
that was the first successful drop kick in professional football since 1941.
It was everything I'm all about. Just being creative or different or doing it in a different way. It was the last play of my professional career. You did something significant. And I wind up having these two trademark moments as bookends in my career.
After a career that spanned 21 years, 8 teams, 3 leagues, and 2 countries, Doug Flutie's football life finally came to a close.
You know, people trying to figure out whether I'm going to retire or not. Well, I joined a men's baseball league with my brothers this spring. You know, that kind of indicated
And Doug is going to be a perpetual child, never wants to grow up, and you know what? That's what makes Doug unique, and that's part of why I love him. Normal day these days for Doug, he gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning. He grabs his paddleboard and he does his paddle surfing. He has his own band, the Flutie Brothers Band. He's playing the drums with them. He plays baseball with a bunch of guys. You know, whatever's going on at the time, he's a part of it, that's for sure. He's never sitting in the house. He's always busy. He's always active.
They all know first pitch fastball, first strike. This is my pitch to hit. So they swing at it, get themselves out. And then as an old man, I can pitch seven innings and throw about 50 pitches.
I always get that call at 5 o'clock, hey, Bill, rush up to the field and throw me batting practice before the game. I said, I gotta work till six. So I'll get up there as soon as I can.
He is a kid at heart.
And we lined out the center again, again.
I remember him saying this for as long as I can remember, Doug, that he does not ever want to have to, quote, work.
Coach, how do you think your team will respond?
He still holds on to the broadcasting aspect of things, which takes a lot of study, but, you know, with what he does with his life, he's able to set his own schedule, do the things he loves to do, be with the people he loves to be with.
This is my good boy.
Far outweighing his recreational activities is the time Flutie spends caring for his son, Dougie.
Dougie was a typical child. He was speaking, could dress himself, feed himself, you know, would catch, shoot a basketball, there's a little Tykes hoop in his room, things like that.
And then at 2.5, he started to regress. So we brought Dougie in to a neurologist, and they did a series of testing on him, and they diagnosed him with autism.
Come on, Dougie, we go outside.
Doug kind of looked at it in a very positive way and in a very competitive way.
Got a good smile anyway.
And thought, all right, what can we do to make this better?
Thank you all for supporting us. It feels like a room full of friends to us that we've known all our lives. And we thank you so much for supporting us for over the years.
Well, how many years have you had the foundation going now?
14, working on almost 15. We've raised $15 million.
It might be the football mentality. You learn to accept what has been dealt you, and you start to move forward.
What, Dougie? Dougie's fired up, Mom.
So many people want to look at children with disabilities and point out the shortcomings and what's wrong. And the way that parents look at it is to look at the abilities of the child and accent those abilities.
Oh, boy.
These are the things that Dougie does well. Dougie lights up a room when he walks into it. He's always happy. He's very affectionate. He doesn't know he's any different from anyone else. I think that's a blessing. And there's just so much there if people would look a little closer.
Looking past limitations, accentuating attributes, erasing doubt. When your name is Doug Flutie, it's just what you do.
When you're 6'4", you have to prove that you can't play. When you're 5'10", you have to prove that you can play. Doug has always kind of followed that thought process through his whole career.
When you're missing something or lacking something that everybody else has, you have to come up with alternative ways to do it. Doug turned his weakness into his strength. Being short made him great. Made him bigger than everybody else in a way.